Welcome, everyone. This is Eurasia Chat, a biweekly discussion of current affairs in Central Asia. I'm Alisher Hamirov, a journalist based in Bishkek.
And I'm Aygerim Toluhanova, journalist from Kazakhstan. So this week we have a lot of topics to discuss again. We will start with energy crisis in Central Asia, Eurasian Economic Union Council's meeting in Bishkek, also some controversial statements of Russia's ambassador in Kazakhstan, Borodavkin, and we'll finish by discussing the divisions caused by New Year celebration in some areas of Central Asia.
Aygerim, I actually wanted to briefly tell us about what's been happening with Saida Mirziyoyeva. You remember we discussed this topic last time. As you know, she was appointed as her father's advisor on mass communications and public relations. So over the past few weeks since her appointment, she's been keeping busy. And the main thing that's keeping her busy is this musical based on this old Uzbek novel called Bygone Days. This musical explores Uzbek society before the Russian invasion of Central Asia a century ago. It's a famous novel. There's a lot of anticipation of this musical, and it seems like Saida Mirziyoyeva is poised to make a dent in the cultural scene. Apart from this musical, she's also been busy fighting gender-based violence in Uzbekistan. At a recent conference, she announced that gender-based violence will be criminalized in Uzbek legislation.
Oh, wow. She's been up to a lot of things since last time we spoke about her. And is she doing all these activities as part of her official job title?
The musical, I think it falls outside somewhat of her purview. But she's president's daughter. Who can tell her not to do anything? But a lot of people are anticipating this musical. This is so big in Uzbekistan. And best directors were hired, best playwrights. And of course, when president's daughter is involved, a lot of resources are poured into this play. So this New Year season will be quite a joyride for a lot of viewers.
Well, good luck to her then with all her activities. Shall we switch to the energy crisis in Central Asia? Because this is one of the most discussed topics in the last few weeks. Alisher, can you tell us what have you heard about what's going on in Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan, for example, and other countries in Central Asia?
The public discontent over energy crisis is growing. Across Central Asian cities, we are seeing electricity cutoffs. In Uzbekistan, we're also seeing that natural gas supplies have become reduced. Uzbek authorities are saying that it has to do with lower pressure caused by freezing temperatures. But a lot of ordinary people, they're not willing to accept this answer. They're saying that, look, authorities had a lot of time to prepare. Every winter we have the same problem. Why can't they solve this energy crisis? And the thing is, it's not just Uzbekistan. Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan, which are more, I would say, endowed with more electricity generating power than other downstream countries like Uzbekistan, they are also struggling. In Tajikistan, we have seen electricity cutoffs in remote areas. And from what we've heard, things are happening in big cities as well. So in sum, the whole region appears like plunging into this energy crisis yet again. 2 years ago, we had similar situation. And so people are reminiscent of all these difficulties and hardships that they've had.
You're right. I mean, in Kazakhstan, it's the same. And I think one of the brightest examples of this energy crisis was what happened in Ekibastuz. It's a small industrial town in the northern part of Kazakhstan, where temperatures in winter can drop up to minus 35, even 40 sometimes. Mm-hmm. So in the end of November, there was a really bad crisis where hundreds of people were left without heating. And authorities were somewhat unsuccessfully trying to solve this crisis. But again, there were a lot of structural problems, and authorities year after year keep saying that there is a problem with tariff policies, that energy, for example, is too cheap, that it won't allow to renew the infrastructure, for example. And there was a discussion about privatization or nationalization of these heating centers.
I was just watching social media discussions on the Uzbek segment, and they're discussing the current Minister of Energy, who actually refused to join Russia-offered Union of Energy Cooperation among Uzbekistan, Russia, and Kazakhstan. The Ministry of Energy of Uzbekistan, he said that Uzbekistan will not join any kind of unions that are not based on commercial calculations. And so that kind of statement was seen by some users as a noble step or as a bold step. But ordinary people, they are cynical. They are saying, hey, you know, we don't care what kind of unions you don't want to join or want to join. We want heat. We want warmth. And those ministers, they sit in their apartments. They don't care about us, ordinary people. So there's a lot of cynicism now about high-level politics. People want solutions, ordinary solutions. And it seems like ordinary solutions, they're not easy to come.
Yeah, I've also read the statement from Uzbek energy representative, and I consider it a pretty bold statement compared to Kazakhstan, because in Kazakhstan, I think first who reacted to Putin's suggestion to create a gas union between three countries mm-hmm. was Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Roman Vasilenko, who said that Kazakhstan's territory shall not be used as a territory to circumvent the sanctions. And then I think there was some news that Peskov said that Uzbek energy minister's words were misinterpreted and that there still is going to be some kind of agreement between three countries. And now it's unclear what is going to happen. But yeah, you're right that it doesn't matter how much time all these high officials are discussing this when regular people are indeed freezing in these temperatures.
I've seen the figure for Uzbekistan. They are talking about 1,400 households in 12 villages or something like that. And the amazing thing is that a lot of those people, they have their distrust of government meant that they are somehow prepared for the worst scenarios. I remember traveling in various parts of Uzbekistan, seeing that, you know, people are preparing for winter starting from the summer. So they prepare like dung, some kind of organic fuel. They look for ways. They don't want to trust the government in Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and Kyrgyzstan because they know that when the time comes, the government will fail them.
But don't they have like central heating, or are you talking more about the people who have just private houses and they heat on their own with coal and other things?
Much of Uzbekistan lives in countryside, rural areas where there are no plants, central like heating plants. Some urban areas like Fergana, Andijan, they have heating plants, but even in those plants, the capacity, the intensity of heating is low because these plants are heated relying on natural gas. And of course, the natural gas volumes are down now across Uzbekistan. So even big cities are suffering from low level of heating. And that's why residents in big cities, they rely on these old Soviet era, you know, heating devices, burzhuyka, we call them. So, And they're really, I've read the reports that they're really helpful. They're handy to a lot, thousands of people across the country.
And how does this look like, burzhuyka?
Burzhuyka, have you seen this film, Dr. Zhivago? There is a scene in which Dr. Zhivago actually heats this stove. It's like a round-shaped metal stove. You just put coal or wood, and it really does miracles. We have one in my village. So everyone, I think, in rural areas has some kind of a metal stove because winters are long and governments are unreliable.
That's interesting. I've never heard about this. I know that in Kazakhstan, people who are not connected to central heating, I mean, those who live in apartments are usually connected to central heating. But those who have their own private households, they usually burn coal or whatever is there to burn. It can be tires, it can be some paper, some wood. I agree with you that people in Central Asia, they really rely only on themselves when it comes to supporting themselves in these harsh winters. The situation in Ekibastuz showed once again that government cannot respond to emergencies effectively, we have seen that despite the best efforts, there was a lot of failures and a lot of volunteers helped to this small town. Mm-hmm. And even some people from Kyrgyzstan actually did a fundraising to help freezing Ekibastuz in Kazakhstan, even though they themselves also suffer. So I found it interesting that we have right now a much closer, let's say, regional cooperation, and people actually read news about each other's countries and try to help.
That's right. And the thing is, you mentioned that the real solution is to upgrade this old infrastructure, energy infrastructure in the entire region, right? So because most electricity grids and pipelines, they're all outdated. They've been installed under the Soviets. And so the way to solve it is to increase tariffs and replace these old infrastructure with new ones. But again, it seems like the main problem is that central governments are unwilling to increase tariffs because they may lead to social disturbances like the ones that happened in January in Kazakhstan. So in Kyrgyzstan, we have losses of electricity because of old electricity grids, up to 40%. Can you believe it? But the government doesn't want to increase electricity tariffs because of fears of social instability, protests, and another revolution. So, and I think that the situation is similar in Uzbekistan. So we're in this vicious circle where in order to solve problems, there is a need to increase tariffs, but governments don't want to increase tariffs. They find it easier just to kind of, you know, react by central subsidies.
Thanks for mentioning this, because I think in Kazakhstan, there is one peculiar situation of actually privatization of these heating plants, for example. In Ekibastuz, as we know, it's privatized, and the company that controls this power plant is owned by Central Asian Electric Power Corporation. And the majority of this firm owned by oligarchs Alexander Klebanov and Sergei Khan. And in Kazakhstan, actually, there was a lot of discussion how, let's say, oligarchs own these power plants and they don't invest properly in them, just, you know, extracting the money. And there was a lot of calls to actually make these oligarchs pay for restructure of this infrastructure. And I think Tokayev recently has also mentioned that the private companies that own the plant should invest some of their money to help the residents of Ekibastuz and help to, you know, invest into the restoring or renovating or at least supporting these old pipelines that are decades old, 50, 60 years old at least.
While the whole region is trying to cope with cold temperatures and energy crisis, Bishkek played host to the meeting of the Supreme Eurasian Economic Council, the highest governing body of Eurasian Economic Union, which consists of five member states, Russia, Armenia, Belarus, Kazakhstan, and Kyrgyzstan. So they met on Friday and Saturday and discussed a range of issues and adopted a series of decisions. One of the decisions was that they will have unified policy on value-added tax across the Eurasian region. And they have also discussed ways of collaborating with other organizations and countries. For example, they discussed the United Arab Emirates and a special agreement with them. And finally, they discussed plans for the next year. Russia was selected as the chair for the next year, so Putin will run the show. But there was some excitement as well. Of course, the Belarus leader, Alexander Lukashenko, stole the show as usual. He complained that the car that the Kyrgyz authorities provided for him didn't work, and so he had to walk to the meeting of the gathering. And of course, that caused a big stir. People were happy to hear that Belarus president couldn't actually use the car, and he had to walk because he needs to walk, as some people said, because he's a little bit obese. So there was a lot of irony in that.
And as far as I know, there should have been all five presidents coming to Bishkek, right? But Uzbek president didn't come.
Well, Uzbekistan has a status as an observer. So Mirziyoyev sent his prime minister, Abdullah Aripov, to represent Uzbekistan. The question I have for you, Aygerim, is, But what do ordinary people think about the Eurasian Economic Union in Kazakhstan? Are they benefiting from it personally, or are they cynical about it? What are the views?
The regular people do not benefit from Eurasian Economic Union. There were a lot of stories about different tariffs, for example, with cars, that they become more expensive to import from abroad, and that regular people actually see an increase in prices for different products. And people for a long time have been calling to exit Eurasian Economic Union. But of course, there is always this discrepancy of what official Kazakhstan is doing and what regular Kazakhstanis want. And I remember when Kazakhstan signed a deal to join Eurasian Economic Union, there were a lot of protests. A lot of activists have been predicting that something like that will happen. And we see now the consequences, but still, I guess it's part of navigating this very, very difficult geopolitical reality. And I don't know what's the right answer now.
So I agree, we've been talking about Russia's influence in the region, and Kazakhstan over the past few weeks has been much under focus. So there's been a recent scandal involving Russian ambassador. Could you tell us a little bit more about what's happening there?
Actually, I would say that this was important story because recently, Russia's ambassador to Kazakhstan, Alexei Borodavkin, in an interview to Sputnik News, which is a Russian-funded news outlet, has stated that in Kazakhstan there is a rise of nationalistic and radical tendencies, and it's becoming more and more clear that Russia will help if Kazakh authorities ask for this help. And this has been received quite negatively in Kazakhstan. People have launched some petitions, for example, to deport this ambassador. Why it's important? It's because before, Kazakh authorities have been, let's say, ignoring what different Russian officials were saying, whether it's State Duma representatives or some other people that were talking on Russian TV. And now it's official diplomat who is saying this, and we still didn't see any reaction from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Kazakhstan or other representative. We've only heard some reaction from
Speaker of Majlis, the lower house of parliament, Yerlan Koshanov, saying that
the diplomat should not equal themselves to a propagandist. And in fact, this is not the only thing that happened in Kazakhstan. There was another recent scandal in which actually some teenagers from high school in Almaty were sent to a cinema to watch a propagandist movie about Russia, about Crimea joining Russia, and that Russia's territory is increasing and Russia is becoming powerful, and how regular people are feeling proud of it. In Kazakhstan, it's becoming a very kind of, you know, gray area. What is really happening? What Russia is trying to do in Kazakhstan in terms of using Kazakhstan or showing that it still has influence in Kazakhstan, but, you know, local population is kind of resisting to be influenced by the Russian propaganda. But of course, some part of Kazakh population is watching Russian TV and they support Russia's invasion into Ukraine. So it's really complicated situation in society. It's divided, but still it's, at least in bigger cities, people are showing resistance that they don't want any Russian influence in their country and that they are going to be very vocal about it. One of the examples was that one blogger, Arman Shuraev, actually recorded a video to Russian officials saying that if you decide to invade Kazakhstan, this is just to let you know that there will be corpse of Russian soldiers in Kazakh steppe if you decide to do that, and that we will respond very harshly. You know, the tensions are getting higher and higher with all these statements from Russian officials, and the response inside Kazakhstan. And I don't know, it's escalating and I don't know where
we
it
have,
will lead.
We have something similar happening in Kyrgyzstan as well. For example, our Speaker of Parliament has recently come up with this idea of renaming the names of Bishkek's Soviet districts into Kyrgyz ones. So there's been always desire to change them into Kyrgyz ones. And the Russian reaction was immediate, the Russian government's reaction. Russian Duma MPs, they lambasted the suggestion or this idea. And of course, Kyrgyz MPs, then they accused their Russian colleagues of interference in domestic affairs. So, but it seems like here in Kyrgyzstan, we have to stay very cognizant of Russia's potential reaction to some of our initiatives. So Russia always is watching.
Let's move on to a lighter topic now. Alisher, I'm actually curious because we will have a new year soon. How does new year topic is being discussed in Kyrgyzstan or Uzbekistan, let's say? Do people celebrate new year or not?
I am actually facing a personal dilemma. I live in Bishkek, but my relatives live in Osh, the second largest city, and in a small Osh suburb called Aravan. So I've been invited to Aravan by my relatives, but I'm perplexed because one group of them stopped celebrating a New Year's Day for religious or for some other reasons, whereas the other segment is very much looking forward to celebrate it in the old, like, Soviet way, like we always did. And so I'm afraid of hurting some of my relatives who don't celebrate. But yet, you know, I want to celebrate with those relatives who do it. And I actually called a friend of mine who is an imam in Aravan, Israel, and I consulted with him saying, hey, it seems like the whole country is divided. Should they celebrate? Should they not? And my village is not exclusion to this rule. And he said, don't worry, there's nothing in Quran or in our religion that proscribes celebrations. So New Year is the start of a new plan. So every family can have a gathering and have a peaceful ceremony where they can share plans. So he said there's nothing wrong. And so that kind of advice stopped the internal debate within me. But I know that a lot of people, especially in the more religious parts of the country in the south, they will have this debate whether they should have Christmas trees on the streets, whether they should bring gifts to children and all that, whether they should drink alcohol, actually. So there are a lot of moral dilemmas connected with this holiday. But what about in Kazakhstan? What's happening there?
Well, in Kazakhstan, in general, every year we have some holidays like Valentine's Day, New Year. But in Kazakhstan, over the past decade, there has been a lot of discussion that we need to have our own holidays. So we have, for example, Nowruz, which mm-hmm. is celebrated in March, and we have officially a few days off there, and it's considered as official, let's say, Kazakh New Year. But we also celebrate regular New Year. And for me and my family, it's a family holiday and it's a must to be together at this New Year Eve to cook together, you know, the same as in March, in Nowruz. But yeah, there have been some changes because, mm-hmm. for example, in February, when we have Valentine's Day in Kazakhstan, we decided to create Kuzi Kurpesh and Bayan Sulu Day, which are two protagonists of some love story like Romeo and Juliet. And we celebrate, let's say, Kazakh Valentine's Day on April 15th. So, yeah, there appear some analogs of these mainstream holidays. And I think that the discussion is also the same as in Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan and other countries of Central Asia, because people are, I guess, trying to find their national identity, especially now when we witness this invasion into Ukraine, and they're trying to understand what as a country we need to celebrate, what as a Kyrgyz, Uzbek, Kazakh, Tajik, Turkmen person I need to celebrate, right? So it's kind of a long process of nation building. and national identity, and it won't stop there. So, but I hope that people will still celebrate New Year, because it's indeed a fun holiday to celebrate with family.
And you know, in Bishkek, most trade like halls and the shopping malls, they're playing Christmas music from the West and from Russia and all that. It's crazy. They play music in English and all that, and it seems like there's so much commercialization, and so it's a bit annoying when you go to any shopping area where you know you have to listen to Christmas songs.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, these Christmas songs are everywhere in the world, almost the same songs every year.
You know, I hate George Michael. Last Christmas is too much. I want to ban that music.
You should get noise-canceling headphones then.
I wish I could.
On this note, we would like to congratulate everyone with a new year. This has been Eurasia Chat podcast with your hosts Alisher Hamidov and Aygirin Toluhanova.
Yes, indeed. We wish you all the best and hope you will be off to a good start in the new year.
See you next year.